Right.
I had a I'm just coming off this weekend from like visiting the South Florida Film Forum. So I met tons of like writers, directors, people in the industry, in my industry, that were like really, really valuable people to have to meet. And so I learned a little bit. I learned a lot about kind of bigger picture stuff. So I think it helped me better understand kind of my messaging, my positioning, and addressing some of those pain points for customers, which is great. And I had a call today with like the person in my industry regional who like has connections with all tons of people in animation, and he gave me some insight with regards to, I guess, my approach. It's really confusing to some people what the fractional CMO space
Sure.
is, and even more so in the animation world. Like it's really, really weird. It's unheard of.
I'd love to workshop that with you and like chat more and like kind of help you get a little bit more clear on how you share that information.
Yeah, sure.
I want to say that right now your audio is really quiet. Anyone else noticing that for Jose?
Hello.
Yeah, I'll kick it up.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I had to really push you up, and then all my dings on the computer were like deafening.
Yeah, sorry about that. I should be
Yeah, way
coming better
better.
now.
Way better. Okay, cool. So I think just being able to articulate it, because your niche is it's an interesting one to be a fractional CMO in. Some of us are in like, I don't know, more traditional niches where fractional CMOs are more common. Like, it's funny to say that for a service that has only existed for a couple of years, but I think it's more common in places where they know what a fractional CFO is.
Yeah, I'm getting a lot of like, even after explaining it as clearly as I think I'm explaining it, I'm getting a lot of like, oh yeah, so are you just looking for work and you have animators that can do the job? I'm like, no, that's not what I
No.
did. Nope, not it.
Articulating that, I think, is it's something to work on for sure.
Now, we have decent news. I
Yeah, what's
signed
up,
an
Jay?
agreement. I signed a partnership agreement because with A29 Studios, it's an agency that's doing partnerships because I really don't like doing biz dev. So I said, also let me sign an agreement so we can split stuff. So that's part of my biz dev because I know
Cool.
I'm weaker in that. So we'll see how that goes. But I actually signed that earlier and solidified, had our quote kickoff and other stuff this morning. So
Great. Love to hear
thanks.
that. Cool. All right. Anyone else have any news to share? Octavio, nice to have you here.
Exactly, Casey. I
Yeah.
was just about to say, nice to meet you guys. I think I met a couple of you in another session. I definitely meet John. I definitely met John and Casey. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, excited that you're here. I heard from the team a lot about you.
Well, hope it's a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, they said you might not be the fastest guy here, but you're gonna try to be the fastest guy. Get you out of
I'll
that one
try.
to 10K as quickly as possible.
I'll try. I'll try.
Good. That's the whole game here. Just a reminder for everyone, the road to 10K is it's the hardest thing to get through. And once you're through it, everything changes. And just speed run it. Go hard, go hard, go hard. That's what we're after here. I was just kidding about that. Octavio. Michael was saying that you were really fired up.
Oh, that's good. I'll
Lisa
drop a
Perry.
message too, so Michael.
Lisa Perry, you just had a reverb, but anything going on? Did you want to share something? You were off mute for a second and echoed.
Let me cancel the tab back on.
That's actually John. I think, John, you were feeding it back. Lisa, can you talk?
Yeah, hello.
Oh, no, it's Lisa. All right.
Yeah, I'll leave and come back on.
Okay. All right, cool. Well, I want to get down to business. Today is a fun call. So today we've got John on the here, and John has been at CMOX for a couple years. John, let me just tell you how I found John. John came in as a marketing technician for me. And when I started the business, I wanted to find someone to help me, and I didn't really know the work. So I went to that website, acadium.com. Maybe some of you have heard of it. I would say it's kind of fallen out of favor for me right now, but maybe they've reinvented in the last 6 months and they're better. But it used to be this place where it was people looking for internships, and it was a crazy deal. It was like you spent, I don't know, $500, $200, something like that. And then you could get placed with someone who wanted to be an intern for How long was it, John? It was a long time. Is it like 3 months?
Yeah, I think I offered 4 or 5 hours a week for 3 months, something
Yeah.
like that
It was
initially.
excellent. And it was free. Right? So like I'm like interviewing a bunch of folks and then they're all seeming like kind of fine, like not all that interesting. And then I talked to John and I'm like, whoa, this guy gets it. And so then John and I worked together for 3 months. And at the end of that, it was give him a letter of recommendation or hire him. It's kind of the expectation. So he gets like kind of on the job training. And I was like, well, I'd love for you to step in and help. And over time, John kind of moved his way through the company. And now he leads, I think of it more as gatekeeping our membership, making sure that the right members come in and that the members that come in are hungry and want to grow. And we're only putting good people through here. Early on, you know, we kind of struggled with, we would kind of take in anybody. And the problem with that was like, we just would have terrible calls because people weren't committed. They weren't trying. They were just things were wrong. So John stepped in and he started kind of gatekeeping that. And he's done a really great job. And one of the things that John does really well is he builds gaps. And the gap is kind of where you are versus where you want to be. And he helps establish that gap. And I thought it'd be interesting for you all to hear because a lot of you had a conversation with John before you came in, or you had a conversation with Melissa. And I think this methodology is great because it's not pushy, because it doesn't feel high pressure, it doesn't feel scammy. It's just like an honest position of where the person is, where they want to go, and how you can help them. And I asked John to put together a small presentation on what he's like, kind of how he thinks through this. And afterwards, we can ask him questions and we can do some role play and play around and just have some fun. That's the big idea. So if John shared how to build gaps with your prospective clients so that they want to work with you and kind of all they can think about is working with you, would that be a valuable way that we could spend like the next 50 minutes? Yeah, sounds good. Yeah, okay, cool. All right, John, rip it.
Okay. All right. So I thought the best way to approach this training was to for you to come away with two main takeaways. One is just understanding the philosophy behind what building the gap means, and then also a few tactical ways that you can actually build the gap with the prospects. All right. So first things first, in terms of the philosophy and the idea of what building the gap is, it's this essentially: pain plus urgency equals action. This is crucial to all sales success because without a gap, there is no pain, right? Without the pain, there is no urgency. And so it never actually gets people to take the next step, even when they're telling you, I have this problem and I need you to fix it. Think of the gap as pain because that will actually trigger action. All right. So, one mental model that you can use for sales is all behavior is pain avoidance. Because if you think about when somebody wants something, essentially, the goal of wanting something is to not want it anymore. Right. So I always, this is why monks will often create the most minimal lives possible, where they reduce the pain of desire. All right. So it's the satisfying part of it is actually the quelling of the pain. Right. And so when you're on a sales call, the person's telling you that they're in pain, and it's your responsibility to have them see it and diagnose it and give that painkiller to the best of your ability.
I want to just sit on
Right.
this for a second. All behavior is pain avoidance. When I think of sales, it's kind of like kind of the overarching topic here, sales, if we want to call it that. I think sales can have like a good, I don't know, good vibes, bad vibes. Like sales is a weird word for some people. I don't want to sell someone. I want someone to want to work with me, whatever. The idea of pain avoidance is just like, this is such like a basic animal instinct. Will you talk about that and like, why going for that depth of a core emotion is more critical than something else? Like people want to make, I want to make more money, dude. I just want my marketing to work. Like, can we just talk about marketing? Like, why do you drop down into like a, I don't know, a, like a primal pain?
Because that innate emotion is ultimately what drives the logic, right? So people actually buy with emotion and they rationalize with logic, right? It's like when you want the fancy car, and then you say things like, well, actually, if I have that acceleration, it can get me out of a bad spot on the highway, right? It's actually safer for me to have a car that can have that acceleration, right? You don't actually need it, you know, but it's like these sort of things that people rationalize. I think human beings are amazing at rationalizing anything, right? And so that's why you have to sort of think about it in this way, because you have to get to that core bit, which is, yeah, I just want something, I just want better results for my marketing. But what's behind that is I'm a business owner who, and I don't feel like I'm reaching my potential. Right? That's the thing. That's the pain. Yeah. Well, why is that important? Well, because my self-worth is tied to my business, something like that. You see? And so that's why this is the core driver of sales.
Yeah, and I think I want to go like a little bit further on this. Like the only thing I want you guys to walk away from here is like one or two or maybe three things. One, two, or three things. Like this isn't for you to remember everything John said, take notes on all these things. It's like I want you to leave with a bumper sticker that you want to put on your forehead so that you see it every time you look in the mirror or you're on a video call. Like what is the thing? Everyone that you're talking to is trying to avoid pain. So it seems to me that identifying their pain is a pretty critical thing to do. And some of you rush into solution before there's pain. So I just think like this is such a fundamental piece. We have to identify pain early because our belief is that the prospect wants to avoid pain and that there is nothing that overwrites this belief if it's such a core belief. Like it's so close to the bare metal. That's like the reptilian brain that they want to be away from pain. That we're kind of like just like getting to the core of the thing that they want. This feels more than just like a passing statement to me, John. Like I just want to make sure everyone's hearing that this is, I don't know how to say it, but it's just core to human behavior. And if we can elicit change at this level, then everything else about time or money, or you're not pretty enough, or you're not smart enough, or what about AI, or marketing's dumb, like all of that stuff can kind of disappear. We've invalidated a lot of that because we've gone down to the basis of where this all exists, which is pain and their desire to avoid it. Okay.
And everything else in this presentation you can see is coming from that core, right? So even if you guys take away things directly, that's phrases directly from the presentation, that's fine. But if you have the same fundamental, you can create your own versions of that, right? So follow-up questions or consequence questions, all of them, if you have that mental model of what is the pain that they're trying to avoid, you'll be directionally in the right place. Yeah. Okay. So before you actually build the gap, there's a few things that need to happen. So this can be covered on a triage call, but you can also reaffirm it on any sales call. All right. And so you'll see that it's what's the catalyst? What triggered them to come here? Why is now the right time to do something about this? So again, associating it with pain, sometimes with doctors, you know, they'll have a patient who comes to them and says, yeah, I've had this back problem for like a little while and it's kind of been building up, and then I went to pick something up and then it hit me, right? I know I should have done something 2, 3 months ago about it, but I didn't, and now it's urgent. Right? So sometimes that why now question is really important because they're going to tell you everything that is
the precursor to them actually taking action,
Yeah,
right?
and I want to suggest here too that like your job, everyone here, your job is to figure out the foundation of what's going on so that you can pull the right levers to get someone to take action. If you don't understand why now or what brought them to the call, then you've just missed a whole tactical kind of angle. So you want to ask these questions. And John, you asked them. I remember you like brought this question up to me once. And I was like, how do you ask it? And you're like, I just say to the person, why did you want to talk now? It's like such a simple approach to it. But then the person says, because our CMO just left, because we just got a round of funding, because something. You're like, awesome. This is intel that you simply can't get. It's almost the reason why I don't, and I know this probably sounds bad, but if I'm talking to a prospect, doing a triage call, I'm not doing a bunch of research on them beforehand. Because the research that I care about is the why now research. And the only way I can get that is by asking them directly. So there's no article that I can find on Crunchbase that's going to tell me why the person wants to talk to me now. I just want to hear it from their mouth because it's probably something painful that they're experiencing, like in this moment.
Yeah, I remember a placement call years ago, and the person said, I said, why now? And he said, if I don't bring in a fractional CMO, then I won't get the round of funding. And they literally made it a precursor, right? So to get the next round of funding, you have to bring in a fractional CMO.
That's awesome.
And so, yeah, so if I didn't
What
ask the why
intel?
now question, yeah, exactly. So
It
that it's
fundamentally
very
changes
important to ask this.
the whole sales conversation then changes because I know you have to
Absolutely.
hire someone. So now it's either me or somebody else. It's a very different position than convincing someone that they need a fractional CMO and not an agency.
Yeah, so I'd say that's the most important out of all of these four, but ideally you do all of them. Why us is a good one, or why me? Often because depending on where they are in the stages of awareness, they may make a statement here that they already believe you are the solution. Right. So they could have read a piece that you did, or you were on a podcast or something like that. And they're essentially saying, I think you are the solution. Now it's your job to not mess this up and disprove my opinion of you. Right. As opposed to having to completely win them over. Yeah. And then also commitment to change. That's a this one you can ask just in quite simple terms. Like, are you committed to solving this problem? Right? Or, are you definitely going to solve this problem? Or is this like a nice to have? Or is it a no, I need to change this? Yeah, again, you want to get that commitment from the prospect. Yeah. So when we're talking about, I put this as before building the gap, because I see this as preparing them to see the gap. So when I was putting this together, it reminded me of going to the Grand Canyon, and I was driving from, I can't remember, Monument Valley or somewhere like that, in a very rural, very sparse. And then as you get closer to the Grand Canyon, you start to see the RVs, you start to see more traffic, you go into the park, and you start to get like a bit of a buzz, because everyone is kind of excited to see this massive gap. You're mentally preparing yourself to be in awe. And so it's important to do this on the sales call as well, right? Because they're likely to they really go down into the gap, right? As opposed to surface level. Yeah. Okay, so that's what you do beforehand. Now, in terms of what you actually do in the gap, you can do it in different stages, like where you are now, where you need to be, what's holding you back. You can kind of put those in different orders, but I'm doing this one from starting with the reality, like the current situation of the pain. So an easy line that you can use is just, what's missing or broken right now? And this is a very broad question. and can go in so many different directions, right? What's important that you do here is you listen to the emotional keywords. So with business owners, one of the most common ones you'll hear is frustrated. Right? I'm frustrated with our lack of lead flow. And you want to lean into this. So you'll say something like, you'll say, frustrated. But you ask it as a hanging question so that they then dive further into the pain around this. Right? Sometimes in sales, this is called twisting the knife, which is not the nicest phrase, but you get what it means. Right. And so this is really important because, again, you want them to relive the pain that they're experiencing every week on that sales call. Because if they don't relive the pain on the sales call, then they won't have the urgency, which means they won't act. Right. So you have to have them relive the pain in order to give them the prescription.
John, I want to share that at my worst on sales calls, back like when I was at the agency, when I really didn't have a process, I'd hear someone share something and then I would immediately turn into solution architecting. But I really wouldn't understand if that was the actual problem. So, how would you use these emotional anchors to dig deeper and to clarify actually the problem? And how does the CMO here know that they've done enough digging before they kind of switch over to any kind of solution?
Okay, one way you can do it is so often they'll give an answer and you'll sort of pick it out, the word that they said, and then you'll let them finish. And then you say, you sort of bring it back. You'll say, you said you were frustrated with the current marketing manager. Like, what did you mean by that exactly? You just say that. And then what they'll do is they'll go down another path, which is really around the big problem and pain. In terms of knowing if you've got enough, I don't know if there's a sort of set criteria for that. I think experience helps a lot.
Sure.
But like, are you starting to actually sort of feel the pain almost? I think it's probably a good measure of it, right? You could start to think, okay, yeah, that person, I can see how I don't even work for you guys yet, and they're already starting to annoy me, right? Something like that. If you could start to feel a little bit of it, I'd say that's a good measure. But there's no, I don't have a clear idea of when it's fully satisfied.
To me, I feel like this is a place that I could stay on a call for a while and just kind of keep digging as long as time allowed. If I had an hour and we started getting into this 20 minutes in, I could spend the next 20 minutes really digging through more of their pain like this. You agree?
Yes. So there is, a lot of people say that the sale is made in discovery. And so we're in the discovery right now, like the discovery of the pain. The better you do in that period, in that discovery, the shorter the pitch needs to be. Right? Because the gap is so big and so intense. Right? So I would leave at least half, ideally two-thirds of the call would be around their pain, consequences from, we'll get into consequences in a minute, but basically all around building the gap. Yeah,
Great.
because discovering about the business is building the gap if you do it correctly.
And I would argue too that the details of the business matter less than the emotional pain that the prospect is feeling and your commitment to be the person that solves that problem. And like, there's the logic of what you'll do and how you'll help, but that comes second to them saying, working with Casey means that this pain's gone. Maybe the how is cloudy to them, but they're committed to the emotion of the relief.
The Yeah, you're right, because the urgency element comes from how they personally feel, and you don't want to stay on surface level logical marketing talk too much, right? You want to shift that into, well, what impact is this actually having on you, right, as a business owner, right? And that's how we get into the consequence, which is coming up. But yeah, there's lots of ways to just keep twisting the knife, so to speak. But I think the key takeaway here is to hear a emotional word, like frustrated, angry, sick of it, whatever, and then make sure that you have a follow-up question once they've given one of those triggers. Okay.
Great.
Then you always need to talk about roadblocks. So we understand what the pain is now, the current state. We know they're not happy about it, but why are they in it? Right. So we're not actually done with pain here. We're actually going deeper into it and having them feel it in a different way. So you can use these two questions. These are very straightforward questions for any sales call. How long's it been going on for? What has stopped you from solving this problem? The goal of this question is for them to realize and ideally admit that there is a skill gap. If they don't see their own inability, they will not hire an expert at 10K per month, right? So they have to say, essentially, I have a skill gap here, which you don't.
Is it skill exclusively? Would you say this also is fair for capacity? I'm the CEO. I
Yeah.
can do it myself, but dude, I got to do this other stuff instead, and I just need someone in. Like, that's an adequate answer, right?
Yeah. Capacity. Yeah. Capacity, I think, has a stronger connection to consequence questions. Where, so absolutely, you have a business to run. What could you do if you were spending an extra 10, 15 hours on
Right.
distribution,
Right.
right? Absolutely. But often this is often sometimes used as a like a personal anchor, right? So that it also helps them give off, sorry, delegate authority to you. And if they identify that they have a skill gap, then when you come in, they're going to see you as someone who has more skill in this area. And so it can help delegate that authority.
Great.
Yeah.
And these are like little micro yeses along the way. Like the first one is, tell me about the pain that you're in, right? Effectively, you're asking that question and then you're drilling down into it. And when they answer that question a second time with more depth, they're effectively saying, all right, I trust this person enough to share this information with them. And I don't jump in and just say, hey, share everything. Give me your financials. How much money do you make in the business? But I can find all of that stuff out in probably 60 minutes of talking to them. It's just these like little micro agreements that we have along the way where we build trust. And I think that these are great ones for that. What stopped you from solving this before is great. One I like, John, I think this is like a little bit of a jerk question, but it can be useful when calls are kind of getting off the rails, which is what was your plan to solve this problem before we talked? And they often say something like, I didn't have a plan, or I don't know. We would have just figured it out, you know? But like that can kind of help them realize that they actually don't have a solution outside of our conversation right now.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. And often you want to a chunk down. So, how long has this been going on for? 6 months. What stopped you from solving it? Okay, well, what was, if you use yours, Casey, what was your solution if I didn't have an answer for you right now? And they said, well, then I'm completely screwed, right?
Right.
So then what they did is they've just built a massive gap for
Yep.
you. Yeah.
Yeah, it's I have to work with you now in my mind because that's the only solution, or I have to go figure it all out without you. And that's heavy. And oftentimes what we do here is the fractional CMO is like our job is to make things easier and faster. And I know we'll talk about it a bit more in a minute, but I think speed matters so much right now. Cost matters less and speed matters more. Companies that I think we're in kind of a race. I don't know. What do you want to call it? 8 months, 12 months, something like that with AI before we have like a lot more agentic businesses and things that kind of shift to the next level. With these considerations, companies need to move quickly. They need a CMO in place now. They don't need to like wait until they have every answer to be able to do it themselves and save money in 6 months, because I think a big opportunity window will close. So I think speed matters here too.
And one other point around when you're in roadblocks or any type of blockers, you want to make sure that you can articulate their problem better than they can. Because if you can articulate their problem better than they can, there is an assumption that you have all the answers. Right? This is true across anything. Right? So this is probably something that you'll naturally be able to do because you know how to solve marketing problems, right? So there's the building the gap questions here that you can take away, and then the articulation of their problems succinctly and just very clearly so that they have those, yeah, you're right, those aha moments. That just builds the authority, which again is very important for them to trust you. All right. Okay, so that's roadblocks. And then we go into consequences. So we've established the gap. We've established the extent of the gap. Now, what we're doing is we're seeing what the cost of the gap is. So, one thing as fractional CMOs is that you're selling to entrepreneurs. Now, entrepreneurs generally have a higher risk tolerance than the normal public. Okay, so this is very important that you know this for when you're selling. Okay, because an entrepreneur will value opportunity cost basically as equivalent to hard cost or closer to equivalent as hard cost. Whereas a normal person, someone who's been in a job for 30 years, they don't value opportunity cost anywhere near as much as real cost, like hard costs. Does that make sense? So there have been studies on
Yeah, hard
this.
cost, Jose, hard cost is cash. Opportunity cost is you miss the window. So,
Yeah.
example of a real opportunity cost. I don't know what it is yet. I don't know. Maybe some of y'all can think about it for your industries. But like what's going to happen with oil prices and the markets? Something's going to happen here. Are we going to see food prices go up? What does that mean about, bringing manufacturing back to the States? What does it all mean? I don't know. But I would think for some of our members that are in like the oil and gas and renewable space, like this is starting to feel like an opportunity. Like, US oil probably feels like a different opportunity right now. And I don't think she's on Mel. Is Mel on? But Melanie's in oil and gas space. And for her clients, like, does her rate matter? Or does it matter that this is kind of like a once in a 20-year, once in a 40-year opportunity to capitalize on something that's incredibly monumental in the market? So the hard cost for Mel, let's say she's 15 grand a month. Okay, that's something, but the opportunity cost of not winning these contracts is worth hundreds of millions of dollars. So they're more focused on that opportunity than they are on the hard cost. And oftentimes, too, I want to say that companies will spend a premium because they think that that solves every problem. Like to them, they're like, well, I'll just get the most expensive thing because the most expensive thing should be able to do everything the cheap stuff can do. Then it's often true with you guys. Like you guys are very capable. But just having being the higher price often means that people will select the higher price as a scapegoat to say, I did everything. It's like hiring McKinsey as a consultancy. It's like, why'd you hire McKinsey? Well, who else would I hire? They're the best, you know? All right, John.
Yeah, it's had a buy cheap, buy twice argument,
Yeah, right.
right? Yeah, so consequences is very important to lean into. And just one way to help you guys under sort of frame it even further is there, I saw a study a couple of years ago, and what it is if I give you $50, right, you could be like a 7 out of 10 on the happiness scale, right? You wouldn't be like thrilled over the moon, but you'd think, oh, that's nice.
It'd be a good day. Someone just gives you $50, it's a good day.
Yeah, but wait for the next bit. If I took stole $50 from you, right, you'd be 10 out of 10 on the pissed off scale,
Yeah.
right? It's the same amount of value going two different ways, but humans have a negativity bias, which means that they need to preserve, right?
I'll tell you, I lost my wallet and I thought someone stole it or something. I was raged. I was so upset. And I tracked it down to the dumpster and found it. Yeah, very different than finding $20 on the ground or something.
And so this is just human nature. I mean, the one difference with entrepreneurs is that they're more likely to have an equivalent scale, right? So they might be like an 8 out of 10 if you give it to them, and a 9 out of 10 if you take it from them, right? A very safe person would be an even greater disparity. All right. So you want to lean into the consequences, because entrepreneurs are normally very scared of negative consequences by not capitalizing on the opportunity. All right. Okay, and then we go into the ideal result. So we've been taking them down into the valley, right, the bottom of the Grand Canyon. And now what we want to do is we want them to look up on the other side of it. And obviously, if you're at the bottom looking at the other side, it's a much greater in terms of perspective than if you're on one side of the gap looking over to the other side of the gap. You see what I mean? It's like the height of the of what needs to be scaled. Right. And so this is where you really say, okay, what is it that they're looking to achieve? That this sort of on paper result. And then what does that actually mean to them? How does it feel when you have solved this problem? Right? And they'll say, okay, it feels like relief. It feels like I get my confidence back. Yeah. Now, even though we're in the more the nicer part of building the gap here, you can still bring them back down to earth. So if I said, okay, yeah, but how does it feel when we get to this ideal result that you're explaining to me right now? Yeah, oh yeah, I'd feel so relieved. I'd have more time with my to spend on other parts of the business. It's like, okay, so if it feels like relief when you get there, how does it feel right now? It feels like stress. It feels like, there's no light at the end of the tunnel. However, like, you see what I mean? You actually have them relive the pain as they're looking out on the way out, because this is where this is just before the pitch, right? And so I think, yeah, frustration is one of the most common ones that you'll have with business owners. And so then we're going to get into the pitch, which is the pain relief.
Yeah, and I want to suggest here too that there's tension that you're creating along the way. There's like tension and then release and tension and release. And for some of you, your sales process is to just kind of word vomit and overload someone with all the ways that you can help them. And there's just no re there's it's all tension release. There's no tension there afterwards. And I think, John, this right here really establishes more and more tension on the call. It's like they're having a sense of like looking at something for the first time with this level of clarity. Not maybe because they're incapable of doing it, but just simply because they haven't taken the time. There's an expert in front of them that's walking them through this, and they're thinking to themselves, "Oh shit, like things are actually worse than I thought." Or the outcome is now, it's not as good as I thought it would be. And I really need to take action on this. Like, I'm worried about things without taking action. So I think of it as a bit of tension that we want to create.
Yeah. And it's always important to remember that they're the one with the problem. Right. So you can sometimes you can sort of try to, over pitch or oversell, and you think if I say more, I'll score more points, sort of thing. Right. But typically the person who says less is the one who has the control on the conversation. The one who say, asks more questions is the one with the power of a conversation. So like that tension, you're sitting back, you're asking a question, and then they're giving you might ask a question for 10 seconds and they're giving you a 2 minute long response. Yeah. And so that is also important to maintain in that seat, because you are the one with the solution. You're the one who can help them. Okay. All right. And then we get into actual pain relief. So the prescription. Yeah. Now, you'll see that there's two real ways for them to get pain relief. Both of these have to be true. They have to be committed to the change. But you've had those little micro commitments along the way of this call. And then there's confidence in the solution. The confidence in the solution, I believe, is mostly the person and also the plan, right? But I would say it's a who, not how approach most of the time, right? So because you've articulated their problems better than they can, because you have not been overly salesy, you've been consultative on this call, this is when they start to trust you and they think it's maybe in the who, not how approach. All right. Generally, the more effective you are in building the gap, the easier the pitch is, the shorter the pitch has to be. And they will be less nitpicky if a really big gap has been established. Right. One thing you need to be careful of a trade-off though, is you want to make sure you answer the big questions without doing the word vomit. Right. So the big questions have to be answered. And the little questions, they can kind of just trust that you have the solution. Right? Because if the big questions aren't answered, a confused mind always says no.
That's right.
Right. So you have to make sure that they see that the big milestones and the little questions, they probably won't need to answer because they just trust that you have the answers there. All right. But they do need the big questions answered. Does
Give
that
me an
make
example
sense?
of a big
Okay, so
question.
A big question is, how much does it cost to work with you? That's an example of one.
And how would you answer that? Because you're further enough along on this conversation to kind of be able to start laying out a solution for them.
So for the so this is if we're doing the So engaged or advisor, and we should know if they're doing engaged or advisor now.
Yeah, and really, it'd be the like engaged or a half day consult or a 30 day strategy review. Right, we're not going to sell advisor out the front gate.
Yeah, true. I mean, if it's right at this point, I would say, based on where you guys are and where you need to be, I'd recommend this engaged package, which is me. You can be one of my three clients, one of my four clients, and it's 10K per month. And then after you drop the price, you don't say anything. That's very important, because again, it's that tension.
I just want to say, it is probably the most important thing, and it is the weirdest thing to say, And if you're like working with someone who kind of gets it, it's kind of a game because they won't talk and you won't talk. And you know, it like I was on a call with someone and I shared price and it was like probably 60 seconds of silence. And then he broke the silence, which is like how it had to be. It's almost kind of fun that it's a sport, but you guys can't talk. You say your price and that's it. Like, how much is that Maserati? Oh, that's $124,000. That's it. And then, like, what do you want to do? That's too much. That's okay. That makes sense. Whatever. It doesn't matter. But, like, that's what the price is. And I just want to remind you all, too, that your price doesn't change depending on the client, unless it goes up because you want to just YOLO it and push it. But you have a price. Your engaged price is $7,500 a month, or it's 10K, or it's 12K, or it's 15K, or it's 22,500. Whatever you want it to be, that's just what it is. There's no justification for it or anything. It's like you wouldn't go to a car dealer and say, like, how much is that? And they tell you, and you're like, why is it so much? And like expect that they're going to tell you about like the engine and like the German design or the Italian leather seats or whatever, right? It's just like, that's just how much it is. That's what's up. Like, that's it. So I think that that's a really important thing. That's one of the few things that I think is like is a must take away from today is you share the price and then you shut up. And above, like whatever's on camera is like still and chill. And whatever's below camera, you could be fidgeting and kicking your legs like crazy, but you can't let anyone see that you're kind of freaking out when you share that. That's really important.
That is a good one. Yeah, because it comes across as beggy if you say, but you get this, or but I can do that, right? I promise. It is the luxurious watch salesman, 100%, or the
And if y'all haven't experienced
Maserati
this,
showroom.
go to a luxury place, go check something out, and then try to like ask them for a deal on the price. Just go play the game. Just go see what a sales associate does. If it's a higher end place, they're just going to be like, that's the price. And if it's a lower end place, maybe they'll offer a deal. John. Or they're like, come back for the returning to school special when we're going to give you 15% off. We wouldn't do that as CMOs. That'd be silly.
All right, that is the end of my presentation. As I said, the pain relief is the last bit of building the gap. So
And the
I don't
only
have
pain
anything about
relief,
pitching.
like there's two pain reliefs I would suggest, John. One pain relief is I don't think I can help you, and I think this is the best way for you to go. And then the other pain relief is I think I can help you. Can I share what that could look like? That's it. That's the only relief that they get from pain. I'm going to tell you what you need. That's not me, or I'm going to tell you that it is me, but I'm not going to disclose. Okay, so what I think you need is like an SEO campaign where we track these specific three keywords, and we're going to use this tool called Screaming Frog to do yada yada, and we're going to build. You guys don't get into that detail because then the client's like, oh, what'd you say? Let me Google that. They just want you as the person that solves the problem. Paul's got a question here. It's a good one. Paul's in like the what, municipal water space?
Municipal, industrial, water, and wastewater.
Bobby Boucher, is that a fair? The water boy?
Lot of times.
Yeah. Okay. So he has a good question. Any thoughts on situations where a prospect already has tried an expensive thing and you're the second pass?
I can
This is
add
one of
some
the things I love
color
about
there,
John,
like
is he's not like jumping on an answer. He's like really considering
I can be a bit too reflective sometimes.
it.
It depends when do they bring this up, right? If they said, oh, I tried another fractional CMO before, I tried an agency before, and it didn't work out, right? Casey, I remember you saying something similar to this before, where you did a comparison. I can't remember what it was. It was like you hired, I can't remember. So I can't remember what what Casey's example was.
But just like hiring and getting a bad result.
So I mean, one thing I wouldn't necessarily answer this that directly. I would answer this by because generally with objections, you want them to happen subtly be handled throughout a call. But you don't want it to get to the end of the call. And then there's like five big things and your objection handling. Typically, objection handling is actually a sign of a bad sales call. Right. And so what you could do in this is throughout the call, just make sure you're saying things like, is there anything about this that doesn't make complete sense to you? Right. Or is there anything that's holding you back from believing this is the viable solution for you? Right. Because then they might say something around ROI or price like that. But generally, you don't want this to happen at the end of a call. I always think that's a bad sign if they just have like 5, 10 objections at the end of the call.
Yeah, I would also suggest, Paul, just to kind of get some more specifics around what didn't work for them. Like, what was the example? They hired an agency or they hired a CMO?
They hired an agency, not niched within the industry, built a bunch of pages that didn't make any sense, didn't yield any outcomes, and now they're like, we've been chatting now for a while, and I did an audit for them, so we have somewhat of a relationship, but they're like struggling to pull the trigger on the next thing because it's almost like, well, I want to have a pretty detailed idea of like what's going to happen over the next 6 months, and I'm like, you wouldn't ask for that for literally any other hire in your company. So I'm trying to figure out how to kind of uncouple myself from this other agency they used without just blindly saying, well, they sucked and
I think I would state something along the lines of like, I totally get it. It sounds like you guys worked with an agency that sold themselves really well and they didn't deliver. That sucks. Definitely have seen it before because our market's really unique and nuanced. I mean, as you guys know, like the space is just unique. It's not like any other space in the public sector. And I mean, even some of the utility sectors, it's like a little different. So I get it. I think what might could make sense is maybe we spend, I don't know, let's do 30 days where I come in and I develop a full strategy for you that takes you guys through Q3, all the way through Q3. Lay that whole thing out for you. And then at the end of that, we decide if we want to work together and want me to come, make that happen, like bring it to fruition or not. How would that sound? Because if they want a 6 month strategy from you, it's cool. I get it. I kind of agree with them. That would be a nice thing to have, right? And you say, cool, just pay me for it and I'll do it.
Right.
That's the route I'd always take. I don't think it's an unreasonable request. Does anyone want this cat? Paul, does that help or do you feel stuck?
It helps. I mean, part of it is just like the prospect is who they are, and the CEO is kind of like in a paralyzed state. So there's not a lot I can say to shake him out of that other than like, let's try it for a month, like you said, or let's do a 3-monther and see how it's going. But at the end of the day, like any hire takes a little bit of a leap of faith. Kind of don't know what you're going to get until they're in the seat and they start producing.
I've done a like a 6 month commitment with a 30 day out. Let's work together for 30 days. Listen, let's commit in good faith for 6 months. I think we're in agreement that if this works out, we want to be together for a few years. We'll commit for 6 months and I'm going to write in a 30 day out for you. I get it. You've been burned before. Give me 30 days and then I'll deliver a strategy to you on the 30th day. We'll review it.
How's my baby?
Nope. Lauren, you're off mute. I'll mute you. I wonder if she's talking about her child or her Maine Coon cat. Yeah, that's the route I'd go and give them that 30 day out and see how that feels with them. What do you
Makes
think? Could
sense.
that, you think that would push them over or no?
Yeah, I think probably.
Yeah. And then also just be busy. Also be the guy. I had someone hire me. He's like, I read your book. You're the guy. I was like, cool. I am. So if you had some more stuff that showed that you were the guy, what would it be? Would
Yeah.
it be a report? Would it be a book? Something that shows that you're
Right.
the expert that that agency didn't have. You want them to feel like you're the perfect
Gotcha.
fit. Yeah. Okay, cool. All right. What other questions do we have here? All good, Lauren. Gareth, where are you? There you are. How are you, man? So, real quick, how's the family? Everything okay? Bombs not flying today?
Well, there's a big one at 3 in the morning this morning.
But otherwise, we haven't heard anything else throughout the day. So yeah,
He's
they
in
had a good
Dubai.
day. Yeah.
Yeah, wow, man. I hope your water desalination plants stay like
Yeah,
operating.
we don't know what's going on at the moment. We're like, we think it's gonna end. No, wait, it's not gonna end. Well, there was a truce. There's not a truce. So
Ugh.
yeah, it's up in the air at the
Ugh.
moment. So
Yeah.
yeah,
All right, so
God.
what's your question for John?
So when I know buyers need to be in an emotional state when they make a purchase, but they go through a series of an emotional and logical justifications throughout that process. I'm just wondering, do you keep them in that emotional state throughout the entire sales conversation, or do you move them into like emotional and then back into a logical thinking and then back into emotional and then back into logical and then finish on emotional because people buy on that? Because what I've heard is if you keep them in an emotional state for too long, they buy because they're in that emotion, but then they wake up the next day and then they're like, wait, hang on, what did I do? I have buyer's remorse. And then they kind of come back and go, I've thought about it, and then I've got to go, you know, and then they jump off. I just want to
That's a
know
good question.
your thoughts on that.
Yeah. I think it follows the idea that people reason with logic, right? So they make the emotional commitment and then they reason, they back it up with logic, right? So you can think of that, but also when you're actually on the call, you will find that in business sales, there's always a lot of logic involved, right? You're not selling fitness plans, right? Which is all emotion, basically, right? And so it's always logic. Show that you're competent, show that you have the authority, but then bring it down into emotion so they have an attachment from like some level of emotional attachment to whatever's happening in the business. Yeah. There is actually a phrase that B2B sales is logical, B2C sales is emotional, but I don't think it's true. So what I'd say is talk about the logical and then have one sort of dangling emotion attached to any part of the logical solution or the logical problem. All right. And then at the end, when it's actually a pitch, sometimes they literally will not be able to sign the contract or make the payment or whatever it is, but they can be committed to doing it. And then maybe a real like logistical thing that is just a logical solution. Right. Oh, I need to move some money from here to here. I need to speak with the accountant. Yeah, but if it doesn't really matter at that point if you've got them to the emotional commitment, because then the logic kind of sorts itself out at that point.
And the
So I think
emotional
it's always a
commitment
bit
to
of
be,
give and take.
it feels like someone saying, I'm in, let me just figure out how to make this work. It's like, cool, how do we do it? But it is a true commitment like that.
And always downplay the logistical things. So if they say like, yeah, there's the CFO, just need to have a word with that, but they're committed, you don't make that a big deal. You say, okay, yeah, that's fine. That's a nothing issue, right? The most important thing is that you want this thing, you know?
This is the solution for you. The only thing standing in your way is a conversation with your wife.
Yeah, well,
Cool.
if yeah, that's a whole there's a whole like whole section for that, which is like you need to talk about the spousal commitment and things like that. But yeah, just get them to the emotional commitment.
Gareth, is that helpful?
Yeah, that's good. I just have a lot of the time that I get to the end of the call and they're like, this is great. Let me think about that. And you're like, ah, okay,
Let me
cool.
think about that. Think about that isn't any kind of commitment.
And I've left
John,
them in
what do
a
you do with that?
thinking state.
So, firstly, you don't solve the let me think about that easily. The solution to that is that you haven't twisted the knife, that you haven't done enough in terms of building the gap. That because if there's no urgency, then the answer is always let me think about that. Right.
Let me think about that. Let me think about lunch. Let me think about the birthday gift I have to get for my kid. Let me just think about it.
Yeah. But you have to make it clear, like a lot of these people, their businesses, there's kind of a fire going on. It's like a little fire in the kitchen,
My name's
right?
Stability.
And they're thinking, I know I need to do something about that, and I know it's going to become a real problem. And you have to say, there's a bloody fire, go sort it out. Otherwise, everything's going to go tits up. And so it's really important that you always leverage that catastrophization of it all,
So what do you, when they say, let me think about that, is that when you go back into, you said in 6 to 12 months that it would look like that if we don't do that. Sir, what would you say
I want to
next?
suggest that the first answer though, Sharon, is you don't want them to say, let me think about it, because that is a definition that you didn't do enough to find the problem. Let me think about it isn't the answer. Like, it's, I'm talking to another CMO. That could be okay because they know that the solution is a CMO. But let me think about it suggests that the problem isn't painful enough for them to take action on now because you didn't do your job of exposing their pain and making it worse.
Okay.
Twisting the
Yeah,
knife.
but
Is that right, John?
there are a few follow-ups you can use. So, if they say, let me think about that, they're not giving you their actual objection. So you need to find the real objection. Now, a very easy one to use and very popular is you'll say something like, okay, yeah, not a problem. Just quick temperature check though. On a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being this is a no-brainer for you and 1 being this is absolutely useless, where do you sit on that scale right now? And then they'll say, seven. You're like, okay.
They'll always
So
say
what,
seven. Is that the answer?
yes, sometimes I say you can't say seven if I think they're going to say seven. So they have to say eight or six.
If you shrink it to 1 to 5, you get more definitive answers and you avoid the seven.
That's a good question. That's a good point. And then you say, okay, so what needs to be true in order for it to be a 10? Or what do we need to do in order for it to be a 10? And then they'll give you the real objection. Then they'll say something like, yeah, I just need to be confident that I'm going to get an ROI. And then there's a whole different thing, but that's about uncovering the real objection.
Okay.
John, you're so skillful with what I like to call your pain point upgrade. You really listen in for what they need and what's bothering them, and then in your very refined British way, make it sound more intense and elegant. Like I'd love for you to give everyone an example of a pain point and how you upgrade it and make it hit home a little harder.
So pain point upgrade, that's your vocabulary,
Right,
right?
yeah.
Okay, so what you mean there is you essentially, when they've given an issue, you need to dive down into it. So a pain point could be something like, let's say, I'm not sure I'm going to get the ROI, right? Actually, no, that's not the best one. I don't know, Melissa, do you have one in mind? I can't think of one right now.
Yeah, sorry, I put you on the spot. I mean, I think an ROI is a good question because I think you oftentimes go into a value statement after that, and then it becomes easy to see.
So I tell you, so the when you ask the question, what's prevented you from solving this? That's the pain point upgrade, right? Because they've given you a blocker, so essentially their pain point, and then what you've done is you've then attached it to their own skill gaps. Right. So I think that's always a really good one. What stopped you from solving this problem? Right. Or, are you going to allow this con to continue? Because now you've got, instead of a pain point
That's
being
a painful
isolated,
one.
instead of it being isolated, you've now got the consequence. You've now got the effect. You've now got sometimes there's self-worth involved in it as well,
Kind of
you
calling
know?
out a guy, like calling him out, like, are you going to let this keep happening? Oof, it's a tough one.
Yeah. It's so the biggest emotional mover is identity, right? If you ever really want to insult someone, you insult what they identify with, right? Like if someone's really into surfboarding and you say it's stupid,
That really, because they're you know, the way they dress, they talk, and everything is all attached to an
You piss
identity.
Gareth off just a little bit. I think he's a little bit of a surfer.
Yeah, but it's like that's one of the easiest ways to emotionally manipulate people, and like if you really do it in a bad way. But it also is one of the big drivers for positive change. Right? That's why when people talk about habits, one of the first things is to create an identity of the person that you want to be, and then you create the habits underneath that. And so if you link a pain point to an identity, that's the pain point upgrade.
Yeah, and you do a nice job of articulating that when in a sales scenario that you take X and build the downstream in your, so when you reflect it back, you say something to the effect of, and if you don't solve this, then you're not providing for your family, and you sort of have it bloom into something that's bigger, and it hits home a lot harder.
Yeah. And that's important because they're telling you this. I mean, they're telling you they're coming to a doctor, they're saying, I am in pain, I have a problem. And you're just trying to make sure that they actually act on the pain instead of 6 months down the line, they're still complaining about it, they still
Yeah.
haven't solved it, they're no better off. Yeah.
I think of the discipline of therapy and how therapy like helps you kind of figure out what's going on. And then there's coaches, and coaches will get you to like take action to do something. And I think we're going to see like a big rise in coaching because coaches can call people out and like hold them to do stuff and therapists can't. You go to therapy the next week and they're like, "Did you talk to your mom?" And you're like, "Nah." But a coach would be like, "Pick up the phone right now and call your mom." So I think like that's different. That's one of the ways that we can push on people is that we can kind of coach them a little bit. Like, hey, if we're going to work together, you got to see me as the person who's going to be like pushing you along and like making this stuff happen. Let's make it happen right now. So asking people, I think more direct questions is helpful. I think a lot of CEOs live in a world where they are on a podium and everyone just like reveres them and no one pushes back on them. But they're looking for someone who like has their best interest in mind, that's like trying to help them get to the next level. And I think we can do that in these sales conversations. All right. Any last question as we draw this to a close? What's a big takeaway y'all had? Anything that you're walking away with? Maybe like a one-liner?
I don't think I
Carolyn?
spent enough time. I don't think I spent enough time really digging into the pain because I see it so clearly and I just go, all right, that's the solution, that's the way to
Oh.
go. And I don't think that I give them the time to catch up with where I am in my head.
So you're right, but they don't feel it.
Yeah. Well, I think
Hmm.
I don't give them the time to process it themselves to get to where I can see they need to be.
That's
Yeah.
big. That's a really big one. One of the things about you, John, is you're not a fast talker. And I think it's a good thing. I think
Yeah,
that's
I've had to
helpful.
train myself to not do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe you could teach me how.
Yeah,
I think I'm at a
it's.
deficit then. Big disadvantage.
Yeah, are you a fast talker, Sharon? Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, and so Carolyn, with that, where you sort of think that you jump to the conclusion, just sort of ask yourself, have I really twisted the knife, right? In the most helpful way possible, right? It's not like a sadistic or mean thing to twist a knife, right? But just make sure you have I done it, and normally you can do it to quite an extent. And then you kind of think, okay, I think I've done enough. When you feel like you've overdone it, that's when you can move on.
You see, I think you've changed my whole thought process on it because I'm always thinking like I'm in those calls trying to get enough information for me to be able to tell, to work out what I need to give them or what they need to do, as opposed to them recognizing that the problem is as big as it really is. So you've really switched my thinking on it. Like it's not about what I
Yeah.
need to get out of it, it's about what they need to identify themselves, what they need to be aware of.
Yeah, and if it's a marketing problem, you can say things like, well, how does the head of sales feel about this? It's like, oh, she is not happy, right? It's like, okay, so now we've got another issue coming along. Right? Another consequence of not solving this problem is you have unhappy
Nice.
employees, things like that.
Yeah, that's really, it's really good, John. You've just completely changed my whole way of thinking about it.
John, I love a question similar
Okay.
to that one, which is like, is your spouse happy when you guys go on vacation and you're working? You know, it's a good one. It's like, what would it be like to have that time back for them, not just for you?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. All right. Well, I hope you all got something that you can take away from that. I think though that like this idea, you know, I don't want to tell you what to say. I don't want to give you like just the exact. I mean, we do in some ways. We give you scripts for sales, and that's helpful. But you got to know how to think. And what you have to think here is pain avoidance is the number one thing. So you have to identify the pain, have them clarify it, and then show them that the best way to avoid it is like, I'm right here. And if you liked everything that I said, I can put it on a document and you can sign that tomorrow. We can get started on Monday. How does that sound? Like, that's easy pain avoidance. That's not like I have to go research and figure something out. It's like, no, I'll just do it. I'll do it all for you. So we just reduce the probability that they're going to feel the pain that they're afraid of. And I think that's a really cool thing that we can do. Right, John, thank you for the help. Thanks for jumping on. And
Yeah, you're welcome.
if folks have questions in the lab, would you mind if we pass them over to you to maybe get an answer?
Sure. Yeah, of course.
Great. Okay, cool. All right, great job, guys. I'll see you guys later. Thanks for being here on a
Thank
Monday.
you.
See you
Thank
guys.
you,
All right.
guys.
See either of
Bye-bye.
you.